From the perspective of a media buyer or planner, all the tech that's used on a day-to-day basis is just supposed to work. It's a common expectation in an internet-first world that web-based tools are operating on command as we expect them to. In order to fulfill the daily functions of media buying and planning, we need those tools to work. That's why tech leaders like Jeff Smith are ones that advertisers can't live without. Jeff is the director of production operations at Centro. If everything goes as planned, Jeff says no one needs to know that he nor his team exists, and he makes sure of it by making an ad tech platform like Basis run as expected. Despite the heavy weight that Jeff's role carries, he also does a ton of stuff outside the walls of Centro. He's a tech leader, speaker, and book author. He's been noted in Crain's Chicago Business as one of Chicago's most noted tech leaders. Jeff shares his wisdom on the tech-forward side of the ad tech business and ways he keeps developing and challenging himself to grow and learn. This episode on being a tech leader and how to keep developing yourself professionally starts right now. Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you making time to have this conversation, to share a little bit about more of the tech side of things as it relates to advertising technology and being a tech leader.
Hey, thanks for having me, Norm. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, I think the right thing to do to start us off is just get a little bit of background on what it is that you do professionally.
Sure. So I am in the production operations space, which is a role that sort of sits invisibly in the tech stack for most people that are interacting with tools and products. But what my group is responsible for is all of the plumbing, infrastructure, services, networking that has to happen for you to be able to load a website like Basis. So everyone knows what a developer does. People have a pretty good understanding of like reporting analyst does. But what people don't realize is there is a massive web of tools, servers, network devices that sit in between your interface with a tool like Basis or Gmail or anything like that, and what it takes to actually get your request to code that a developer has written. So my team is predominantly responsible for managing all of that infrastructure, but then also managing all of the tools and infrastructure that developers need to actually be able to produce the product.
Just like getting a little bit more color around how that might impact people who work in ad tech slash they might be programmatic media buyers. If I am buying programmatic media and I use a tool like Basis, how might I think about your work impacting me personally? So if I'm buying media inside of this tool, what are you actively doing now or moving into the future that helps improve my experience with Basis?
Sure. So one of the things that we focus on is reliability and scalability of the platform itself. So if I'm doing my job well, you don't notice that I exist at all. Our goal is to be able to proactively monitor Basis platform and respond to any potential issues that might crop up and to be able to identify them and remediate them in real time. We focus on a lot of automation to do that so that it doesn't require human intervention. But our goal is to make sure that your experience is seamless, that any issues that we have on our side can be sort of dealt with transparently so that you're not interrupted. And so that we can deliver new features, new functionality without, you know, interrupting your working session. So how do we, if we need to deploy something during the middle of the day, how do we do that without interrupting your user experience, but at the same time delivering, you know, a critical feature out during the workday? Those are the types of areas that we focus on, basically making sure that the plumbing of how we deliver this tool is completely transparent to you. So my goal is to make sure that you don't know that I exist. If people know my name, then something's probably a little wrong.
So what would be an example of something that I wouldn't want to know is going awry, like some sort of challenge or conflict that I might otherwise face as a media buyer, let's say?
So for example, you don't want to really care that one server in a fleet of 100 is having a problem, right? You don't want to know that, oh, the server that I'm currently connecting to as I'm making this purchase is having a problem and I'm going to have to retry my request. What my team would do is say, okay, you know, Norm pushed this button and the server that was supposed to go to had a problem. How do I capture that, automatically retry that request, and then send the result back to the user without the user getting a big error splash screen and then saying, oh, what should I do? Maybe I should just reload and see what happens. I think we've sort of become accustomed to failure as end users. So, you know, people tend not to freak out. They tend to just sort of instinctively retry a thing a few times before it fails. But our goal is to make sure that you don't have to do that, that we handle that for you on the back end if there's issues. Because there's always going to be issues. There's always going to be problems. But it's how we handle and deal with those problems and keep the burden off of the end user.
For folks who are listening in, I'm sure many people who are listeners of AdTech Unfiltered, this is a little bit of a different vantage point as far as Jeff being more focused on that background operational aspect of a technology that you might buy in. So you may not be thinking about things from this lens commonly. So hopefully some interesting exposure there. But I also wanted to pivot into many of the other incredible things about Jeff. We didn't only want to spotlight some of the things that he's doing to make ad tech and ad tech platforms work great, but also many of the cool leadership skills that he has, and talk about professional development as a tech leader in the larger tech and ad tech ecosystems. So I wanted to turn there and ask this question. Jeff, you've been a leader for a long time. What makes for a good tech leader, and what makes for a good ad tech leader, if that makes sense?
Oh, man. So I will start with a good tech leader. So for a good tech leader, right, the technology is constantly changing. So you have to have an ability to sort of spin up on a technology relatively quickly and understand how it might benefit or impact your business. And as a leader, I think it is important that you are constantly evaluating these things under a critical lens, because as technologists, we can get really excited about the new technology, right? But we have to continually ask ourselves, like, you know, okay, what is the benefit that this is actually delivering to the organization? What is the opportunity cost that we're going to have to spend to adopt this technology? And will it have a payoff in the end? So I think having a critical eye for new technology and how it will apply to your organization and how it will benefit your organization is probably super crucial in technology generally. In ad tech specifically, I think one of the challenges for technologists is we often work at a layer of abstraction. And what I mean by that is the work that we do specifically in my field, in operations, doesn't necessarily translate directly to a business outcome. And what I mean by that is, like, it is difficult to say why doing a bunch of security patches translates to, you know, more revenue potentially from sales or marketing or whatever. So in ad tech, I think one of the crucial things is, as a technologist, we have to keep up with what is happening in the industry and understanding the business in a way that we might not have to in other industries. So for example, I worked in a company that did tax law. I didn't know anything about tax law. I didn't need to know anything about tax law. And I could be effective, but only to a certain point. In ad tech, because of the sheer volume, because of the sheer complexity of the space, you have to have an understanding of what it is that your customers are doing, even though you are a few steps removed from them, mainly because your decisions will still impact what it is that they do. So understanding their business cycles for something even as simple as a deploy, right? So I might have different guidelines around deploying during Q4 than I might during Q1. Right? And understanding sort of the advertising cycles helps me evaluate and make those decisions. So I feel like I need to be much more in tune with the business in ad tech specifically, more so than I did in other fields.
That makes me want to ask you a question about anything that you've been exposed to as far as the nuances of the media buying process or things having to do with programmatic media. Has there been any exposure and or need to be exposed to any of those experiences thinking about that end user?
Yes. So as I was saying, like I just wanted to level up on my media buying experience, period. So I'd been reading some books. We have an ad tech boot camp at Centro that I watched some videos for. And it was interesting to see sort of the landscape of all of the different players involved in this space and how they sort of interconnect and relate to each other. And it really sort of hammered home just the sheer amount of complexity that exists in this space, the sheer amount of touch points that exist in this space. And it made me realize, and it made me, you know, reevaluate some of the things that we were doing internally about how do we make things generic, knowing that we might need to plug into a different player tomorrow, right? Or next week. So how do we design things so that we have these generic interfaces that we can then easily adapt so that we can quickly partner with other people? I think that was probably the biggest eye-opening experience when I saw just like the sheer complexity of the advertising landscape. I think another thing was just going through the media buying process. Obviously, I've never done that before, but sitting down and walking through what a media buyer actually goes through made me realize all of the different touch points that they have with my system and how I need to deal with and interact with those things. So a perfect example is if you are making an attachment to a media plan, right? That triggers a bunch of workflows on my side, whereas I need to store that file. I need to make sure that it's retrievable later. I need to make sure that it is virus scanned, right? And if there is an issue, how do I notify that user that there is an issue? How do I protect my systems from a potentially bad file that was uploaded by a user unknowingly? So these were all things that I began to think about once I was able to sit in the chair of a media buyer and say, oh, this is the experience from their perspective, but this is how it interfaces with my tools and how I need to not only protect my systems, but also make sure that the user is aware of what's happening so that if there is an issue and I need to prevent a particular action, they're notified in a good way. And that's sort of like a complex chain of communication because it's not me really interacting directly with the customer. It's really me interacting with the developer who has programmed this particular interface so that I give them a solid error message so that they can bubble that up to the user. So it's, you know, once again, it's like a team effort, but multiple moving parts.
It's really interesting, Jeff. It just showcases it's already such a labyrinthine ecosystem from the perspective of the media buyer for some of the things that you touched on and even some of the things that weren't even specifically communicated that people who do media buying are knowledgeable about, right? Like that there's so many different inventory sources and there's different platforms and there's so many different data partners and there's an endless volume of players that just the media buyer is thinking about. And then for so many different reasons, you also need to be considerate of the fact that there are many implications of the usage of all those different sources on the greater tech infrastructure. So it's wildly complicated work that you guys are tasked to do, and we appreciate that you take so much time and energy to do it. Shifting into thinking about some things from the perspective of professional development, you know, as a tech leader in the larger tech industry and in the ad tech industry, you know, I've known you for a while now, and so many folks have tremendous respect for you as a technologist and as a technology leader. How do you just generally speaking continue to refine your skills as a tech leader, as a technologist, and as a professional?
So, I mean, it's continuous learning, right? You have to continually be learning, specifically in technology, because like technology changes so often. But I think one of the other things that has been a benefit for me is learning from other industries. Computer science is a relatively like young field, right? When you compare it to some of the other engineering disciplines out there. So there's a sort of drive to look at and see like, what are other industries doing and how do they do these things? So an example is one of the things, like I said, my team is tasked with is monitoring for failures, right? But how do we know what type of failures can exist so that we know what to look for, right? It's sort of a backwards question because, you know, I have to basically understand a property of the system to be able to test it. When we started thinking about that, I said, well, you know, who does a lot of this? Manufacturing, right? Manufacturing does this all the time. So what tools and processes does the manufacturing industry use? And I stumbled across this failure mode effects analysis process. So that was something that we could adopt and say, oh, okay, with a few slight changes, we can make this applicable to technology as well. So we've done that on a number of occasions and have had great success being able to brainstorm and identify the types of issues that we might run into and then build appropriate responses and monitoring around that. So, learning from other industries, I think, is huge, because when you remove a lot of the fluff, when you remove a lot of the technology bits, a lot of the problems that we're dealing with are very much the same. A lot of them being people, right? the old adage, people, process, tools, in that order. So looking to other industries has been a huge thing. We're looking at complexity as a concept now in the industry. And a lot of that comes from the medical profession, right? So a lot of the top thought leaders in the technology space around managing complexity are actually coming from the medical field. And they're applying medical principles and just sort of translating it to technology. It's pretty interesting and it's pretty eye-opening.
It's interesting and it's also inspiring. I don't know that many people look to other industries often enough to just shake up the way that they're thinking about the types of challenges and problems that they are looking to solve on a daily basis, and also just re-energize yourself in terms of having the necessary desire and just the willpower to go and attack issues that continue to exist. So I do love that. Another thing I know about you, Jeff, is that you're fantastic at developing your professional network. Back when we were in the office, I know you were continuously meeting up with folks in person, but obviously people have needed to make modifications in this post-COVID world. How have you continued to develop and refine your professional network, both in this post-COVID world and what were you doing before that as well?
Yeah, so networking is a funny thing. People struggle with networking because it feels so transactional, right? It feels like I'm going around asking people for things, or it really doesn't have to be that way. The easiest way I found to approach networking is, instead of trying to figure out what you can get from other people, offer yourself up. Say, oh, hi, I'm Jeff. Nice to meet you. What can I do for you? What can I do to help you grow? You know, what can I do to leverage my network to help you? Because then that sort of turns the tables a bit, in the sense that you're not asking for anything, you're offering something. And if you offer something, it almost always gets reciprocated. So that type of networking takes a little of energy from you, but it is much easier than saying like, hey, I need a job. Even if you're the one looking for a job, say, yeah, I'm on the market, but what can I do for you? What can I do to help you out? And those conversations just sort of naturally flow. And before long, you're introduced to another person and it's like this weird exponential growth. And before long, you've got this massive network and you're like, oh, wow, I did not realize that I had been actively cultivating this, but here it is. And then just, you know, following up and staying in touch with people, you know, that I think that's probably the hardest part. It's a little easier now in COVID, but, you know, you need to maintain those relationships. So even if it's just a simple email check-in, a colleague of mine, Will McNeil, he has mastered this, right? Because it's just so thoughtful and so effortless and so minor, right? He'll just send a text message. Hey, Jeff, just checking in on you and the family, making sure everything's good. Let me know if you need anything. Probably took them 10 seconds, right? But, you know, that was a month ago and it still resonates with me, you know, and when I think of something that Will would be a great fit for, you know, he just pops in my mind and I reach out. And, you know, that's sort of the power of it.
Check-ins are important. And then also to look back at some of the things you just mentioned, like offering yourself up also requires knowing some of the things that you could offer, right? Because the first thing to saying like, what can I do for you, is saying like, hey, who am I and what am I bringing to the table? And I think sometimes we're just not that practiced in doing that. In fact, sometimes we're in networking environments, and maybe this is less true from a tech perspective. Maybe this is more true for ad tech, or this is just the story I've created. People are oftentimes going to networking events and clinging to people that they already know. So there's like no actual networking taking place. So it's like we have to refine the practice of just sharing a little bit about ourselves so that we can make the offer, or if and when appropriate, ask for the assistance of other people as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's a funny thing that you mentioned, like, you know, people go and network with people that they already know. And that is so true. But what you can do, if that's your comfort zone, what you can do is, there's always that person at the meetup that is alone and isn't really talking to someone. Bring them into your circle. even if you brought your own circle, just pull them in. Oh, hey, we're talking about XYZ. I'm, you know, Jeff, who are you? Oh, okay. Well, here, come over here and join us. You know, that is very powerful for the person that was, you know, sort of there and struggling and figuring out what to do next. And it sort of elevates you as a connector of sorts, right? So I think it's huge. You do have to get out there and network with other people. And if you feel more comfortable in your circle, then leverage your circle to pull more people in.
Jeff, you're a reflective person, you're a thoughtful person, as my observations, at least those are the observations that I've made. And so I'm just curious, as far as making contributions to the tech community as part of your professional development, and just to also give back to other people, how do you spread some of that knowledge in public forums? Do you partake in conferences, panels, things of that nature?
Yeah, I do. Well, at least I used to pre-COVID, rest in peace. but I used to do a fair amount of public speaking at different conferences, at meetup groups, you know, even at companies where, you know, someone I know that I've worked with previously is like, hey, we'd love to get your perspective on XYZ. Just being able to share that knowledge, that experience. And one thing that I learned is people assume that when you're giving a talk at a conference that you have to be saying something revolutionary, that you have to say something that's absolutely game-changing. And that's not actually true. You can actually say something that's been said before, but there's something about your voice, there's something about your experience, there's something about the way you deliver it that connects with people that wouldn't connect with another speaker. So I think it's incredibly powerful to understand that your experiences are unique. Your perspective is unique, and someone somewhere out there will benefit from it, whether that be you giving speeches, whether it be you writing blog posts. Somewhere, someone will hear your message and it will resonate with them in a way that's different than if they had read the exact same thing in the New York Times. Somehow your voice connected with them. And I think that was especially true for me. I was speaking at a conference in Berlin, and I was a little intimidated because it's like, you know, a high-end developer conference. And I wasn't sure if the material was deep enough for this audience. And a woman came up to me afterwards and she said, you know, this talk was absolutely amazing. It was exactly at the level that I needed. And, you know, I had thought about these things before, but I'd never really process them the way you had described it. You've opened my eyes. And it was just like, wow, all right, that's great, right? Here I am fretting over this, but you know, I've connected with someone that's actually come up and spoken to me about it. So I'm sure there's other people that it resonated with as well. So when it comes to, you know, giving back, just don't be worried that what you have to say is not unique, useful, or helpful, because I guarantee you it is to someone out there.
I do think it is the default to sell yourself short and not reflect on the fact that your experiences are unique in the ways that you described. I'm also curious about just getting into that headspace, like going back to the fact that you are a reflective person, you're thinking about a lot of different ideas, and then that helps you come up with maybe topical areas that you want to engage in conversation with if you're networking, or if you wanted to put together a proposal to speak about something, to write a piece. Is that just an ongoing process that you're working with? I'm wondering about it from the perspective of chicken and the egg. Do you think about the fact that you want to make some sort of piece, or you want to be a part of some sort of speaking engagement, and then you think about the things that you might want to share back? Or is it that you have things you want to share and then you're like, let me find the forum to share them in?
Yeah, usually, you know, it really depends on the conference and the talk. Most times what will happen is I will experience something. And when I experience it, I say, you know, this probably happens to other people and it's worth talking about. I think that there's this misnomer that for some reason our experiences are, when we run into issues, are extremely specific, right? Like, oh, this is going to be a very specific case and it won't apply to anyone else. But if you look at the generic portions of an experience or a failure, usually there's themes around that. And you can pull those themes out and turn them into a much more generic discussion. So that's one way that goes about it. Another way might be just jumpstarting a conversation that I feel like people aren't talking about. So I gave a talk on ethics in the computer engineering field and how we really don't have an ethical body of any sort, right? With with medical, you've got, you know, the medical association, you've got the bar, and there are folks that are licensed. It's ironic to me that my barber can't cut my hair without a license from the state, but I can program a 747 and no one wants to validate my credentials at all, right? Other than my employer. And that's weird to me. So I actually got the idea watching an episode of Star Trek where they were dealing with some ethical dilemma. And I said, you know what? This might be an interesting talk. So my talk didn't have any conclusions. It was really just like, you know, how do we jumpstart a conversation about these things? So, you know, inspiration strikes at weird places. And sometimes when it comes, just jot notes down and think about a forum to talk about those. It might even be a meetup. It doesn't have to be a huge conference. But I think if you're looking, you know, to sort of get out there and network, a conference is a great venue to do that, because there's a certain level of credibility that's automatically extended to you simply because you're on stage. And believe it or not, that extension of credibility gives you confidence for the next time you interact with folks. It might put you a bit uneasy as people are coming up to you and, you know, they're treating you as if you're some expert. But it is, I don't know, it's just incredibly empowering to know that, okay, I'm resonating and connecting with people, and, you know, I'm not a total imposter after all.
I'll ask you one final question. What is a unique way that you've furthered your professional development in this post-COVID era that seems to not quite be letting up? What might you suggest to other folks if they also want to be furthering their development in this continued virtual environment?
So one of the things that I've been doing is trying to expose myself to other aspects of the business that I typically don't deal with, things, you know, like financial accounting and things like that. And in the COVID space, I find that senior leaders are a lot more accessible these days than they have been in the past, mostly because a lot of them aren't traveling like they used to be. So it's really been a good opportunity to get senior level mentorship, to talk to people in the organization that may not always be available because you're sort of mentally accustomed to having to be in the same space to meet with them and chat. But now that video conferencing has become so ubiquitous, you know, you're finding a lot of opportunity to meet with people in the org that you historically haven't had that opportunity with. So, you know, coming up with a plan to say like, all right, you know, where do I want to grow professionally in this COVID era? And then using some of the time that the pandemic is giving back to us to try to make that happen. You know, everyone's situation is a little bit different. But like for me, for example, is, you know, I've been trying to get up earlier in the morning so that I can spend 20 minutes on my fake commute, where I basically go into my office and pretend like I'm on the train. And I'll read, you know, sometimes it'll be for fun, but sometimes it'll be for professional educational stuff, like, you know, like the financial accounting stuff I was just talking about. And then from that, I'll say, okay, I'm going to follow up with someone in the org to sort of talk about whatever I read or whatever I had questions about. And people have been incredibly receptive.
Just hearing how often you will bake moments for inspiration into your life, like through all the things that you do, I think will serve as inspiration for other people who might be looking to do similar things as far as how to get started on continuing to professionally develop yourself, whether it's after one day, someday, when we get back to work in ways that are similar to what we've done in the past, or if we continue to do it virtually. Jeff, I really appreciate you hopping on the line and having this conversation with me today.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Jeff Smith, Director of Production Operations at Centra. We appreciate the wise words and inspiration on how to keep growing, learning, and developing in the ad tech and larger tech world. Want to learn more about Jeff's book? You can. Operations Anti-Patterns, DevOps Solutions is available from Simon & Schuster. It's a practical guide on how to bring DevOps to your team when you can't change the structure of the larger organization. That's it for this episode. I'm your host, Noor Nasir. Until next time, we'll catch you for more AdTech Unfiltered.